Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor, and with me I have Megs and I have Josh.
Good evening.
Sploosh, sploosh.
All over.
That's the news.
Yep.
And that's the news, guys.
So we'll be reviewing a movie tonight called Wrist Cutters. So it is a story about suicide. So if you're easily triggered, you might not want to listen to this episode.
Are we doing trigger warnings now?
If somebody does, I'm just doing it. You don't have to agree with what I'm doing. It's for those who'd rather not listen to it. I understand it. It's not a trauma to me, so it doesn't impact me the way it would for some individuals. But I'm not going to talk any more about it for that reason. But I did want to bring up what's his name? Shea Whigham.
Yeah.
This movie was my first introduction to Shea Whigham.
Mine as well.
I really dig Shea Whigham. Yeah. Like he's a great actor.
He kills it in this movie. He's awesome.
I loved him in the Perry Mason series.
Yeah, I never finished that show, and I'm kind of sad that I didn't. I don't know why I didn't finish it, but that was a really good show.
Yes.
And he's great.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever see Take Shelter?
Yes.
That was a good one with what's his butt, too? Shannon.
Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon, yes. Yeah. That one was really cool. He also was in Splinter for a little bit. I don't recall what character he was playing in that. I do not recall. Oh, that's right. He was recently in Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. What voice was he? Spider-Man across the Spider-Verse, the Gray Man, the Gateway. I haven't seen the Gateway. Go back a little further. Sicario, True Detective. What season? 2014.
Yeah,
that would have been the second season, I think, with Vince Vaughn and Colin Farrell.
I'm trying to think who he. I don't know if I remember him on that. I watched all of them, and I'm a fan of his, so it seems like I should have noticed.
He was, I think he was Captain Ted Beecham in The Wolf of Wall Street, which I think was the yacht captain, or like the big yacht.
Yeah.
It was in American Hustle, Savages. That one was all right. I didn't really like that one. It was about the two buddies who... we're doing a grow farm in California, and like the cartel got in on him.
Oh,
what's his name? John Tra was in it. John Travolta. Lords of Dogtown.
Yeah, I saw that he was in that. That was before I knew who he was.
I wonder what was it? It was Drake Landon,
or like a drug dealer or something.
Haven't seen that movie in forever. He's great. I enjoy him. I'd like to see more of him.
He's a true character actor.
Oh yeah, like I wish he would. Character actor aside, I think he could pull a role on his own.
Oh yeah.
You know, I don't think
there are a lot of character
A-lister and like maybe, I think there could be a movie that could put him there. I just don't know what movie.
I think that there are a lot of character actors who've done lead roles, but they're a little more noticeable for their characters or their ability to play a character.
Yeah.
Rather than just themselves, like Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Tigerland. Like, that was one of his first roles, like opposite of Colin Farrell. Like, I just saw that. That was a great fucking movie, too.
Yeah.
Especially in 2000.
Was he the buddy?
I don't know if he was the...
The one that, like, tried to break his leg or whatever?
I think so.
Seems about right.
Yeah, that was a real good movie. That was
fucking 24 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
No, he wasn't the main guy. Wilson. No, Colin Farrell was the original one. Then you had little Clifton Collins.
Your best friend.
Best friends, BFFFF.
Josh is good friends with Clifton. They met.
Nice. No, nice. I barely met him.
They met. They spent some time together hanging out.
Oh, very cool.
Josh was serving him some drinks.
Ooh. Nice.
No, he didn't drink. It was Moises that drank.
Oh.
Little Moises with with the schnoz.
Yeah, but he was there. You didn't serve him anything?
Food one time.
Did you give him some water?
Sure.
Served him
some water. Maybe a cola? I'm not sure.
Maybe a cola?
I only worked twice a week when he was there, so it was mostly my coworker that served him. And then she got invited to the wrap party.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I mean,
you could have been at the wrap party if you'd just taken on an extra shift.
If I had just really put the work in, the initiative, you know, I could have done that. But I think I had to work because somebody quit the other job I was working at. So
that was not I.
No, it was not. It was a man named Scotty.
Oh, yeah.
Scotty doesn't know.
Scotty fucking knew.
What is the Amateur Movie Review Hour? Before we began our podcast, the three of us curated a list of approximately 100 movie genres. We then fed that list to a magical random generator that we use to provide us with a movie genre. The three of us take turns choosing movies to watch that fit into the chosen genre. We then watch that movie and attempt to return bi-weekly to review and discuss that movie. The only movies that we have banned are Marvel and DC movies from the past 15 years. I am not a professional movie reviewer. I just love to watch movies and then review those movies with my friends and you, my fellow screen fiend. Okay. As I said earlier, tonight's movie is Wrist Cutters, a Love Story. The writer and director is Goran Dukic. Or Dukic.
Dukic.
I know the itch is correct because Goran Dragic played for the Suns with that. He had that same accent marker.
Oh, this spelling doesn't have the accent.
I didn't know this. This was based on a short story or a book or a novel, Kneller's Happy Campers by Edgar Currit. Or I don't think it's Carrot. I think it's Currit. Kerret. The actors are Patrick Fugit, Shannon Sossamon, Shea Whigham, Leslie Bibb, and Tom Waits. The release, it had two release dates, at Sundance in January 24, 2006, and then a U.S. release October 19, 2007, almost 2 years, but it doesn't surprise me. Complete independent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They were shopping it. You know, they had it at Sundance, and there might have been some distributors are like, maybe
the terrible beginning, you know, graphics for all the companies. Oh, sure. You know, we're like, it was a red balloon, look at that. Yep, we're fancy.
Yeah there were a lot of other distributors
I watched this on video. I didn't see it at the theater, but by the time this came out, even we were starting to lose our art house theaters, and now they're all gone. We don't have any. There are some people, I think, that call themselves art house theaters. They're all gone.
Sure. Alamo Draft House. I'm not going to say anything of what they are. They're just a film house that shows films. I think movies like that would be a place where you would see a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I would agree. It's not a art house.
Yeah, because the definite money is just selling into Netflix now or whatever. Yes. Or whatever distributor wants to put it on their.
Well, I mean, we lost our art houses like 10, 15 years ago.
True.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, when they tore down Camel View, that was kind of the last.
Fucking
funny. Company I was with was involved with that teardown.
That was so upsetting.
There was a lot of asbestos in there.
Oh, I'm sure. There's asbestos in everything that was built, you know, before the 1950s, especially, and after, but especially before. Okay. And, of course, Tempe, like, everything's gone. It's too bad. I kind of was looking for places to go watch movies over the summer, you know, get out of the heat, but not. I don't want to see that, and I don't want to be with everyone. I want to see something that nobody else wants to see, and I want to be alone in a cool room, but...
Yeah.
That's what I used to do back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it's not something you can do now.
That is true.
At least not here. Yeah. I know that there are still places. In Tucson, they still have. They have Casa Video has expanded. They have Casa Film Bar next door.
Very cool.
Yeah. But, you know.
That's like the Saver theaters are gone, you know. Like the.
Oh, yeah.
The one,
oh,
up, yeah. The one up on Bell. I love
that's
that
That's real
one.
Estate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're all fucking schools now.
Mm-hmm.
They turn. It's an auditorium. We're just having people there. It's school now. It's like,
sure.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that I can think off the top of my head that still sticks around is the Pollock one that's down in Tempe. But I'm not sure where that stands now, especially after the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like,
it's got to be done,
It's possible. It's it's possible.
Hell, it killed the film bar downtown. And yeah. That was a popular hangout for people. They were doing all kinds of stuff down there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, the runtime of this movie is 89 minutes. And it was a pretty tight. I think they could have shaved some minutes here or there. Some of the road traveling scenes, I think they could have.
That's what our theme is, sir.
I understand. Well, I understand. I read what the theme was, but I didn't understand it. That's why we got the movie that we reviewed last time. So, Megs, why this movie?
I just, as far as a road trip movie goes, this is one of my favorites.
Yeah,
The cast is killer. It was that weird time when Shannon Sossaman had done a few things and then disappeared to have her kid, and then came back. This was kind of her comeback film, or one of her comeback films.
Yeah.
And she was kind of that great it girl when it comes to the like kind of dark, mysterious, but super hot, and just
she
really
looks dirty cool. all the time to me. Everything I see her, she looks like greasy.
She is gorgeous.
Just like, except for, what is it?
Oh, A Knight's Tale.
No, the other
one. Or whatever
one.
It's, what is it called?
It's A Knight's Tale, but not that one.
Oh.
The 40 Days and 40 Nights.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah.
Love that movie.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
When he makes her come with the flower.
No, I love Shannon, and I thought that she was perfect for this role. And of course, I love Patrick Fugit. I think that he is a little doll.
Yeah, he's great.
How old was he when he did Almost Famous?
He was 16, 17.
He had to have been, yeah, probably sure. 17, yeah.
And then Shea Whigham was like the big exciting part of this movie, because I already knew who the other actors were. I knew who pretty much everybody was going into this, because they used. It's kind of strange that they were able to get so many great people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't
because it was still indie films and people liked to do
people
that.
People liked to do it. Will Arnett was fresh off Arrested Development,
yeah,
so
sure.
I knew who everybody. You had
what do you have? Fucking six words in the movie.
Yeah, he didn't have
a
huge part,
lot.
But. You know, and then Shay was just one of those people like, who is this guy? I've got to know more about him because he is great.
Yeah.
He probably went for the role Shay had. And then they're like, oh, we like you, but we're going to put you in this one because we need this enigmatic person to, you know, to be this fucking miracle worker.
Yeah. You know? I was surprised to see Clayne Crawford from Lethal Weapon. Like, I didn't watch Lethal Weapon. I think I saw one episode, but I remember all the ladies were all about this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know he got fired from the show for some reason, but I know people would talk about how great he was back then. And I saw the kid, and I'm like, who's that kid? He looks familiar. And I looked him up, and I'm like, that's that guy all the ladies were drooling over a few years back.
Yes.
But the little brother?
No, the shop from Boone Jr.'s.
Oh, okay.
Boone's boyfriend.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mark Boone Jr.
Yeah.
He's now there's a character actor.
Yes. Oh, yeah. 100%. He was that rat cop in Batman Begins.
Mm-hmm. He's just he's in everything.
It was Bullock,
you know?
Right?
Yes. Or wait, am I thinking? Who am I mixing up here? No, that might have been what's his name?
That's him.
Is it? I'm mixing him up with that Irish guy, who had that sitcom on Fox. Oh.
Oh, Donahue.
Oh,
I like
that guy a lot.
He's great. I was mixing him up. Yeah, I was mixing both of them up because they're similar vibes. Like they have similar vibes.
Yeah, that movie, the Tao of Steve.
That movie? I never watched that movie, but I remember exactly where it was at the video store.
Yeah, I think I saw this movie in like 2010 or 2011.
I saw it the same year or whatever it came out, but I don't,
Yeah, I saw it whenever it got to the video store. Yeah, you know, and that, I wasn't working at the video store anymore, but I was still going to pick up whatever was new, you know, and this was one of the movies I grabbed. I probably watched it on cable at some point.
Sure.
Well, for me,
because I've seen it a few times.
For me, it was because like my buddy was into Gogo Bordello, and like I like it as well, and that's great, how it was like. Man. It was like, oh, this guy directed and did it. We're like, oh fuck, and it's like Gypsy Punk, bring it on,
fuck yeah.
And then it's just weird songs on the tape during the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
If it was like, man walking down the ocean, say that. Oh, fucking great. Yeah. Just saying the dumbest shit, but it's awesome. It's
a trap.
Yeah. It's a trap you're stuck inside.
It's great. I still enjoy this movie. Like, outside of it's obvious it was made in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
Like, through and through, she's just gonna use you, like the misogyny of part of it is
the stuff we're not allowed to put in movies anymore.
Yes,
and it like the forceful kissing.
Sure,
we can't have that. That's, you know, you can't have any of that. So there's just you could tell there were things like that. I do believe that if there is some sort of weird in between land, it's going to be a lot like the 90s, though.
Sure,
it's going to
sure.
have that weird it's going to look a lot like that.
Well, yeah, because there's no cell phone, there's no internet.
yeah, you're not going to have any of that stuff.
Yeah, it's like mid-90s technology. That's what you live with now.
Yeah,
like, yep,
that's what you're going to get.
Cassettes and vinyls, that's all you get. There's no digital, it's all analog. Mm-hmm. Have fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was no smiling.
Yeah, I love that Abraham Ben Ruby, he plays Eric, the Austrian roommate.
Yeah,
I forgot that he was in there.
Parker Lewis can't lose.
Yes,
He's been around forever.
Oh yeah,
he still shows up. Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, remember he was on ER forever.
Yeah. I don't recall him being on ER. Maybe a little bit later, right? Not in the beginning.
He was like, wasn't he original? Because I didn't watch ER very long. I watched ER just for the first few years, but he was that. I was like, oh, there's the guy from Parker Lewis Can't Lose. Like, it was just, he was always that guy from Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Yeah.
And he was just always in things and on things, and he was always around, and I don't think I ever knew his name, but I'd see him and be like when I saw him in this movie, I'm like, I don't remember that he was in this.
Yeah,
you know, I totally forgot he was in this.
Yeah, it was a small role.
It was a small role.
Very unnoticeable unless you're paying attention.
Yeah,
I knew who he was.
Yes.
Like, I always knew who he was because he's been around. He was around since my early teens, you know?
Sure.
And I loved Parker Lewis.
They started doing those commercials about like deaf people or some shit.
I don't recall. I thought he did commercials maybe.
Yeah, he did. It was just one. It was like, sometimes when you're talking to somebody, just remember they might be deaf.
I don't remember.
I recall something you know like about that. I don't know if it was exactly that.
It was
that,
like,
but
don't
I,
bully the deaf.
Yeah, it was something so like that. It was. Because he was, you know, from Parker Lewis Can't Lose, and he was that big imposing figure, so they wanted to use that towards
tough guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was the bully.
Yes.
And so he's not going to bully he's not going to bully deaf people. He'll bully everybody else, but not those deaf people.
Yeah. Because they can't hear.
Because they can't hear the bullying, and it's just useless.
Yeah, exactly. He's not hurting anybody's feelings, so.
Yeah.
What if we make a movie called Deaf People, and it's just three deaf people, and they're all just mouthing things to each other? And there's no words in the entire movie. It's just fucking dead air, but you're watching shit happen.
Intriguing.
He's the main character in it. At the beginning, it's him taking a hot shower. He does the wipe the steam off the mirror.
Uh-huh.
Just looking at himself. He mouths something, you can't hear it, and you just go from there.
Yep.
And then magically at the end, he can hear. Anyways, start writing that if someone's out
there.
I'm
on it.
Yeah, free ideas.
Yep.
I thought that when he was doing his Austrian accent, he was just trying to imitate Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It seemed very much so, yeah.
I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
So
he was on ER from 1994 until 2009.
Okay, then I definitely watched him. It was just, his role was not as impactful to me as like maybe LaSalle or Edwards.
So he was one. He was at the front. Like he was a desk guy.
He was a nurse, like a charge nurse.
Wasn't he at the desk?
I think in the beginning orderly kind of deal, but okay. Then it became like he was a nurse or something.
I picture him at a desk. I thought he was just the desk nurse or whoever directs people to places. I don't know. I didn't really watch the show. I just knew that the guy from Parker Lewis was also on ER.
Mm-hmm. Him and the Clunes.
They're super tight. And Margulies, Julia Margulies.
Yep.
And yeah, there were quite a few people on there.
That was a stocked show.
Yes, it was.
Sherry
yes, it was.
Stringfield.
Yep. Yeah, she was the
female doctor.
Did she have cerebral palsy or
no?
Was
that
it?
Was the other gal.
Okay. Yeah.
Sherry Stringfield was originally on As the World Turns.
Yeah.
That's where I knew her from.
I if I saw her, I'd be like, oh, okay, that one. I just don't recall.
She could have been on Guiding Light. It was one of those shows.
She's like, oh, okay.
I don't remember.
It's Brenda. That's what, you know.
Yeah.
Now I'm just making that up. It's not Brenda.
Welcome, Brenda. You got me. I never watched Guiding Light either. Man. I watched ER, but Guiding Light, no.
My family, Angels. they were all my children family was
that's
mine.
Where, well, As the World Turns is where, what's his name comes from? Josh from As the World Turns.
I got nothing for you. I never watched it.
I know, but you'll
Bluto.
Know. Go. Picture Go. Scott Wolf's boyfriend.
Jay?
William Fichtner.
Oh, okay.
The great
okay.
William Fichtner.
Okay.
He's Josh from As the World Turns.
Mm.
He raped his cousin, had a baby with her, and years later, they all became one family.
God, those have to be terrible now because like
you can't have all that stuff.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they're like, even back in the day, it was like, oh my God, did you know Josh is gay? And everybody goes, oh my God. Now it's like, did you know Josh is gay? Yeah, he was making out the guy in the parking lot. No one cares.
Yeah.
It's just so numbed up. It's like, ooh, no one cares about anything.
Well, you can't do all the rape stuff either, but not that you don't like that.
There was like three rapes
a
year.
There were so many rapes.
All those
shows.
There were
so many. Yeah. There were rapes all the time. And when Josh raped his cousin, and impregnated her, and then later on married the cousin's sister, who is also his cousin. And she was like, but I forgive him. You know, it's okay. He didn't mean it.
That's a, things like that. They're just common in the South, though. You know, this is like daily things.
This is not in the South.
I know.
I don't know actually where it was.
Yeah, I think it was in the South.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, like Savannah, something
no,
like that?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was Georgia.
I think it was in Springfield. I think it was in Springfield. Everything's in Springfield.
Springfield, Missouri?
It was over by the Simpsons.
It's a two-syllable city.
Yeah.
Word economy.
Nobody knows where they are. Unless you're on one of the ones that gets to be in L.A. Like, we're in L.A.
Sure.
Or Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the fun ones.
Well, you guys want to get into the spoiler-filled
Let's
review?
Get into it.
All right.
Everyone's dead.
Spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
The movie starts with Zia, played by Patrick Fugit, who is on his bed staring at the ceiling of his messy room. He decides to clean his room after he resets the skipping record player. The camera zooms and tracks in towards the bathroom to reveal that Zia has cut his wrists after he has cleaned his room.
I heard that's a common thing, though, sometimes.
Yeah.
The cleaning, the pruning
you
of the room.
You don't want people to find a mess.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Outside of what I don't... I'm really just guessing here. I'm not a fucking psychologist, psychiatrist. But yes, I would tend towards that. That the only mess that they want to leave behind is the mess that they've made.
Yeah.
Not what they've made previously.
Yeah. You don't want
you know what
to
bothered me the most of that? There was like a jar of peanuts that were like open and sideways. And there was like little scattered peanuts there. I'm like, that's gross. Gross.
But he collapses on the floor, and the blood seeps out of his grievous wounds. We cut to the funeral, where Zia's now ex-girlfriend, Desiree, played by Leslie Bibb, is mourning while smoking a cigarette. Zia narrates how Desiree will potentially mourn his death, and then we get a title card. Next scene, we learn that Zia works at Kamikaze Pizza after he woke up in some type of limbo place.
Kamikaze Pizza.
Uh-huh.
Fuck
uh-huh.
yeah, man. I want that shirt. I want some of that merch, man. That's some merch right there.
I enjoy I enjoy the way that, you know, it seems to, the names imply death or meeting your own demise.
Suicidal. Yeah. But doesn't Leslie Bibb look like a bird woman, though?
Oh, my God.
Just fucking big old bird head.
I love Leslie Bibb.
That's cool, but she still looks like a bird.
I did like her little quirk when we get to the at the end. I was like, why does she have a fucking limp? And then when she explains how she ended up there, I'm like, oh, that's why she's got the little weird cane thing and does the limp. Like,
I would rather they didn't show her falling face first down.
Sure, yeah, that was a little.
She still looks great, you know. Meanwhile, my boyfriend Nick Offerman has a giant hole in his head.
That was
Barry Pepper. They fucking threw. Oh, not Barry Pepper. It was Busey's kid.
Oh yeah.
Jake Busey had that fucking huge scar.
Yeah, it looked like staples too. Looked like there were staples.
I forgot Jake Busey was in this movie.
I did too. And I popped up. I'm like, yes.
Mm-hmm. He was such a fun actor back in the day. He'd always.
I think he peaked at Frighteners though. That was the thing, you know.
I loved him.
And Starship.
Got me a score of 23.
What was the John Cusack movie?
High Fidelity.
No, the good one.
That is a good one. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know.
Oh, Gross Point Blank.
No, I don't.
I said the two good ones.
I love Gross Point Blank, but I'm talking about the.
Damn it.
The.
Fucking Identity.
Identity.
Yeah. The horror movie.
The one that has Jake Busey in it.
Clearly the third or fourth best movie.
Yeah, because it's the only one of those three, those movies you mentioned that has Jake Busey in it. So, yeah.
But we do see the scars of Azia's suicide. Cut to him in his apartment with his Austrian roommate named Eric, who's played by Abraham Ben-Ruby. Azia goes on to narrate that Limbo is a little like the real world, except a little worse. He follows that up with musings about missing Desiree. So he goes out to drink at his local bar, and he's approached by a fellow dead. She and her friend are trying to figure out, or they try to figure out how people have suicided themselves. Zia shows his scars to the asker, and she yells back at her friend, "Hey, score 3 points here." Zia tells her that shit is rude. She doesn't give a fuck, though. Zia asks her how she died, and she goes, we get a flashback to her suicide scene, which is she killed herself with a gas oven. Assumingly because maybe her boyfriend, husband, partner was more into golf, because there was a golf ball next to the note that says, "Do you miss me more?
No, are you sorry now?"
Yeah.
I love that they do the little flashbacks.
I do too. I think they're great.
That was a fun way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just like showing scars, like we can see his scars because we already saw his story.
Yes. Yeah.
But everybody else, I want to see. I like the little flashbacks. I think it's fun.
I thought those were really, really cool.
Yeah.
Zia goes ahead and joins the two women as they try to figure out how other people in the bar killed themselves. This is when Eugene, played by Shea Whigham, interrupts the party. He bets them some beers that they can't guess how he died. And we get a flashback to him of Eugene pouring beer over the pickups of his electric guitar, playing to a room of like three people who clearly don't like his playing at all.
That was great.
Yeah. The next scene, Eugene and Zia are bonding. Eugene explains to Zia how his whole family ended up in limbo. His mom killed herself in the hospital because she missed Russia. His dad killed himself because he missed the mom. And the brother killed him. His little brother ended up killing himself by ODing on pills because it was in his genes or it's in the family or something like that.
Well, he came out gay or something like that.
That's one of the reasons
the dad did
Yes.
Like he missed the mom, and then he found out the son was gay, and he was just like, "I'm out." And then the son, it was in his genes, but wasn't there some other?
I don't recall.
Or did he just miss his family? Who knows?
I don't know. He may have just been depressed. I know.
But he had a lot of issues with sports or whatever. With things didn't go his way because he tried to kill himself.
I think that's what they do later on. Once they get to the family dinner scene and he starts talking, the little brother starts talking to him. I believe that's what that flashback scene is supposed to say. Is like, for at least the little brother, what, Kostya? He never could have. He didn't get used to the fact that life just sucks sometimes. Yeah. And there's nothing you could do about it.
You know what annoyed me is like when you're hanging out with the girls, They got their goddamn beers on the pool table.
Oh yeah. I hate it when people play pool with their bottles, especially bottles.
Sure.
But any drink any glass drink, especially on the table, anything that can spill on the table is annoying, but glass so hard to clean glass out of a goddamn table.
A felt table, like all the felt. Yeah.
All the felt.
Fuck and if then, it falls onto the actual floor.
Savagery.
And then just spilling beer all over the pool table because now it's wet. Mm-hmm. And then the wood underneath warps. It's just such an asshole move.
Yeah. Yeah. So after Eugene has explained to his family explained to Zia how his family ended up in limbo, the following scene is at the family's house and they're all having dinner. It's a very nice scene. You know, they're a family in death. They won't stay apart. And this is where we get Kostya, who is Eugene's little brother, gives an example of Eugene's compassion. I think this is where Kostya is learning, oh, it doesn't fucking matter what happens. I can't control it. And that may have ultimately caused him to kill himself. Zia confesses to Eugene that he wasn't close to his parents. We get a flashback of Desiree as there's intercut shots of Zia and Eugene getting drunk together after playing basketball, I guess, or on their way to go play basketball. Like, this scene is sort of weird, mm-hmm. where Zia, like, I don't want to go out drinking anymore because it makes him depressed. I get that and understand that. But where the hell did they come from?
Yeah.
Because Eugene has a basketball.
Yeah. It's just doing that thing where you have a ball with you. It happens.
I guess. Hey. Like,
ball is life, man.
Everybody knows that. Well, I guess so.
T-shirts say that, too.
They did.
Like, it's important.
It says it. I guess so.
Somebody got a tattooed on them.
Back at Zia and Eric's place, Eric yells at Zia about eating all the cottage cheese. Eric ends up making Zia go to the store to get more cottage cheese, and it's here that Zia runs into Brian, who's played by Jake Busey. Brian informs Zia that Desiree killed herself shortly after he had, and this causes Zia to fucking book the fuck out without getting the cottage cheese, or even, I think, ever going back to his place.
He never went back, and that poor man is still waiting for
poor Eric. Cheese. You fucked him over.
It's purgatory for you.
That's right. Your cottage cheese supply is eaten by your roommate and never replaced.
Yep.
And it was pulled out of one of those gross old fridges, too. It's not like a glass display case. No, it's a fucking old fucking iron fucking lead fucking fridge.
Sure, it's like 55 degrees in there.
Yeah.
It did. It didn't even look like it was cold.
Yeah. So Zia rushes over to Eugene to convince him to drive to Desiree's location. So the pair head out on the road in Eugene's car that has no headlights. They can never be fixed. Everybody's tried, but nobody can fix them. There's also a black hole under the passenger seat.
My favorite part.
I know. I completely forgot about that. I remembered the headlights, but I was like, oh, that's right. There's a fucking literal black hole under the passenger seat. So after the day of driving is coming to a close, they pull into a repair shop to have the headlights looked at. Eugene pretty much says it's fucking useless, but I'll let you have at it. And the mechanic, played by Clayne Crawford, comes out. He tries his best to fix the headlight to no avail. Eugene is paranoid of an Arabian taxi driver. Like, there was no other reason for this scene other than to make Eugene look like a complete paranoid jackass. Clayne returns with his boss, played by Mark Boone Jr., Word corrected it to Bone, so I have Mark Bone Jr.
Oh, Bone.
but he can't fix the headlights either. I do like it when he comes out, he puts his hand on the hood and he's like, oh, you need a fucking transmission, something else. It was hilarious. That was great.
He's like, what is it, the fuel pump?
Yeah.
The fuel pump's on.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck he said, but.
And he falls asleep after his reading of the car. And then there's a brief flashback scene that shows how Clayne and Mark were lovers who end up killing themselves together in a hot tub. Boone Jr.'s wife who came found him, right?
And just then their hands came unclasped. So it was probably just believed that two buddies killed themselves
together. I bet you if it was in Utah, that's exactly what the cops would have wrote. That's what they're going to
say, yeah. Two buddies killed themselves. Sports.
Yeah.
Some bad sports happened.
Yeah. So Eugene and Zia stay the night. The next morning, the pair wake up in the car, and the car is being worked on by the two mechanics. And just as Eugene predicted, they don't get the headlights working.
And don't forget his sunglasses went down the block.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. That'll be recurring for...
That's when we... The first... And that would just drive me crazy because he never held on to anything very well.
Nothing. Yeah.
He was just like
he had just butter on his finger the whole time.
He didn't even try.
No.
I won't walk over a grate with my keys in my hand because I'm terrified I will drop them down the grate.
Sure, yeah.
This kid is just like juggling shit over a black hole. Yeah. It was... I was a little disappointed.
Let's
settle down.
Stop.
I hold things with the greatest of caution over anything that might eat.
Disappear?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
I like to call this the chunk effect. Because remember in the Goonies?
Yeah.
You give something a chunk, you wait 10 seconds, he's going to fucking drop it and break it. This is the chunk effect.
It is the chunk effect.
The pair continue on their way. Somewhere down the road, Eugene spots McCall, played by Shannon Sossamon, and she's hitchhiking because she's looking for the PIC. People in charge. McCall wants to leave because no one can smile, it's hot as balls, and everybody is an asshole. That's directly quote. And she just, quote, wants to go home, unquote. The trio stop at a camping store to buy supplies so they don't have to sleep in the car again. Eugene hits on McCall as Zia goes to pay for supplies. McCall's a rule breaker because she steals a sign that says no stealing. She later throws that sign into their fire that night. We also learn that there are no stars in limbo. Eugene tells McCall that PICs are a joke. They're not real. Just bullshit to get into her pants. But McCall has faith that Zia will find Desiree. Eugene, not so much. Zia has another flashback about Desiree. And when he wakes up, he looks at McCall. Interesting eyes.
Longing.
Longing eyes, yes. The next morning, the trio continue on their way to go find Desiree. McCall is going to drive. That's fine, but Eugene doesn't want to sit in the back because only a man with no cock sits in back seat. There's a montage of McCall looking for the PICs as Zia asks about Desiree at different stops along the way. There's a singing montage as they drive about limbo. They stop at a diner, and Eugene tries to convince Zia that McCall is just using them. McCall overhears them, so she dips the fuck out. Eugene and Zia are missing McCall because Zia breaks out the glasses that she had bought for them. When Zia and Eugene stop for gas, Zia witnesses McCall being arrested by a cop who's played by Nick Offerman. Zia tries to intervene by empathizing with the cop. We have a quick flashback to Nick Offerman as a soldier who decides to take his own life instead of fighting, and he removes his hat to let them go, and you can see the exit wound on the top of his head. Zia attempts to smooth things over with McCall, but McCall is sticking with her decision. She doesn't like the way that Eugene had spoken about her. There is a brief encounter with the station cashier that provides a lead to Desiree. She got the other car. Yeah, that's right.
Which I thought was going to be the taxi for a second.
Sure.
But it wasn't.
So the two, Eugene and Zia, they track down the address to Desiree's location. Unfortunately, Desiree was no longer at that address. So now Zia is directionless. He doesn't know what to do anymore. They continue on down the road. And later that night... When did she come back in? Because she comes back... Now we're back at night. And she's pushing the button that fixes the headlights.
I thought
they smoothed it over at the gas station. Yeah, I thought they smoothed it over at the gas station.
Yeah, she got in the car with them.
Yeah. Yeah, because it made it to look... Yes. Well, yes,
she
yes.
She leaves them, and then the cop thing happens.
Leaves them. The cop thing happens at the gas station. She's released. Eugene and Zia leave... But they end up pulling the gas pump, handle with the hose off, which causes, which leads Zia to go back into the store to get Desiree's location and then come out. And yes, that's right. McCall and Eugene are arguing.
Yeah.
And Eugene, like goes in, goes to kiss her, does kiss her, and McCall ends up pushing him away. He's like, fuck you, don't do that. And everything's all forgiven. And then they get, they all three get back into the car and head on down the road.
Well, he kisses her because she makes the lights go on.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's after that. But okay, they do make up though.
Yeah, when he kisses her. And then the interesting thing was that the guy comes out and makes him go inside and sign.
Yeah.
He's just kind of like, it's okay. People always rip the gas pumps off, nozzles off, and just come in and sign. Just come in and sign this paper. Like, you don't have to give me any money. You don't have to do anything. You just have to sign it and tell me why.
Yeah.
And so that's how he finds
Desiree.
What
were you thinking about?
What were you thinking about when this happened? So he has to, like, that's when he finds Desiree. And I was just like, I was upset. I thought I saw my ex-boyfriend at the next pump.
Yeah.
And so she leaves her address, because that's what you do when you rip something down. Everybody's doing it. There are so many people doing it that they're signing it like a hotel registry. That's how many people are ripping these things off.
So, tidbit about my past. I did work at a gas station for about 6 or 7 years. We never asked anybody to come inside or sign a book or do anything like that ever at all.
How often did that happen?
It probably happened, I'm going to be conservative and say maybe like twice a month.
Are you kidding me?
No. Like, people do it.
That's a lot.
They get busy. They go inside. They get talking to somebody, or they're happy about something. They get in their car and fucking whip, off they go.
Oh, my gosh. I just didn't think it would be that often. I thought it would be something like, oh, no, we had another one, but it'd be like twice a year.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm being conservative.
Wow.
It didn't always happen on, like, my shifts, but... It was an occurrence, and they're easy to fix. You just get the hose. They're made to break away.
Okay.
They have the connection. They're made to break away. Stop. It doesn't spill. So you just go over there and get a ladder and put the hoses back together. If the worst thing that happens is the nozzle might be bent or broken.
Okay. I was picturing like where people
put a new one on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was picturing, because I've seen even where people are driving down the street with something hanging out.
Oh yeah. Yeah. With the whole thing with the nozzle and the hose And worst thing about that for anybody driving next to them is the hose, you'd just be skipping and whacking your vehicle or get tied up underneath your wheel, you know, jam the wheel and cause an accident. So
what happens if you don't unhook your horse from the thing? You think it just pulls the thing out of the ground and you're like dragging that along?
Well, that would be a strong ass horse.
They make you go inside and sign a waiver.
I don't know. I've never done that with my horse.
You rode a horse?
No.
Exactly.
Well, I have ridden a horse.
Oh, you've ridden a horse. Have you ridden a horse?
I have ridden a horse, but that was when I was a very young child.
Like a toddler?
Probably, yeah.
Was it a little pony or?
I don't know. It was the kind that you sit on and it goes around in circles.
Did you go side saddle?
No.
Like a lady?
It wasn't the 1800s, Josh.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll ride your dog side saddle if I want
to. Well, she'll do something. She might just lay down. The first time I rode a horse, I was,
I think I did one when I was
seven,
9 or 10, but I wasn't on my own. Someone led me, you know, kind of deal.
Yeah. That I rode one when somebody led me. And then again, later on in the circle ponies.
Yeah. So but when I was riding as well, somebody was leading me. I wasn't in charge of the reins.
Yeah, which is pretty. I mean, that's sad that you know, like we live in Arizona. But, it's kind of sad that we haven't ridden more horses. My family had a ranch.
Sure. Well, that's more on you. My family didn't have a ranch.
My great grandparents had a ranch. I mean, most of my cousins were like ride, and I don't. I looked at horses. That's about it.
I did it 10 years ago with an ex, and. I always wear shorts.
Uh-huh.
Don't wear shorts if you ride a horse.
Yeah.
They like to run into trees because they like the scratches.
Sure.
So my legs were just fucking shredded.
Like they always are.
And also fucking,
because you wear shorts everywhere.
Yeah, all the time. And they didn't like get me in the stirrup right or whatever. The fucking
those are stirrups.
So I'm like riding like super high kind of, and my legs are just fucking dying, like like my inner thighs were just dying. But it wasn't a long ride. It was over like a small mountains on the south mountain over there.
Oh yeah.
And the way back was way nicer and cooler, so Like, there was coyotes chasing us and shit. Ooh. It was weird, but the guy's like, he's like, don't worry, I got some for them. He had a little gun. I was sure. Like, hey, motherfucker.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You had an adventure.
It was adventure.
I've ridden an elephant.
Oh. Ooh.
I did the camel thing.
I rode a camel.
I rode nice. The camel as well.
Nice.
At the zoo, the Phoenix Zoo.
It was at Ren Fair when I rode the elephant. Oh. Yeah.
I rode it at, like, some county fair. Sure, but not yeah. the Phoenix County. Not Maricopa.
Sure. There's 14 or 15 yeah. counties in Arizona.
Yeah,
so
it was a different.
One of
was like yeah. Back then, we had a lot of carnivals and things like that.
Sure.
I mean, there used
like
to be one
Tibetan
at Park Central.
Man that was like,
What?
Was it like a Tibetan man that was like man in the
No. I'm pretty sure it was
speaking
just,
in strange tongues.
No. It was like he was probably part of a carny crew or something.
Like Irish, like spiky.
No, they may have been, but I didn't hear him.
Elephant can fucking in. Fucking yeah. Elephant Gadane. Yeah.
Dags.
Get away from the digs. Get away from the digs.
Like Dags.
So McCall, Zia, and Eugene are driving down the road, not sure what to do, when McCall starts pressing buttons, and wouldn't you know, they fix the headlight issue. And they stop, and Eugene is happy, and he kisses McCall, and she doesn't like it, and lets him know. As they travel on, Eugene and Zia keep playing with the headlights because it's brand new and they just want to keep turning them on and off. And they turn them on just in time before they run over a guy who's laying in the middle of the road. Eugene, in order to miss him, careens off the road, wrecking his car. The man in the middle of the road is a man named Neller, who's played by Tom Waits. Neller is looking for his doggy Freddy. But it's too late now to continue looking, so he invites them over to his house. His house is in a camp with a bunch of other people. Zia sees a witness. It is John Hawk, who plays Jan. He's floating on a chair. When Zia tries to point it out, the guy is sitting back on the ground again. Neller acknowledges the miracles to Zia, and he rattles off a couple as well. People can change things, different colors. Floating.
Mostly floating. Yeah, floating colors as well.
Yeah. There was one other that I don't recall. It's the throat singing.
Oh.
Because they're introduced to Nanook, who's a mute, but she does, and her miracle is throat singing. Neller holds a storytelling session where he, while the whole camp shares a meal. I really like that story.
Yeah.
It's so basic, but it's like really, like sort of really powerful as well.
Yeah.
Like there was a forest there was straight trees and a crooked tree and some choppers came and the head chopper said, cut down all the straight trees. So they cut down all the straight trees, but they left the crooked tree. And that crooked tree stands to this day, tall and proud and mighty.
Yeah.
Like, fucking powerful. And it's Tom Waits telling it, so.
Doesn't hurt.
Not at all. McCall, after finishing her meal, lights a cigarette with a match. When she throws that match aside, instead of falling, it rises into the night sky and becomes a star, which is her miracle. The next day, Zia discusses how bad he wants to do a miracle.
He was just really, I want to do a miracle.
Yeah. It's like a little kid who's like, I want to do a flip. Yeah. Why can't I do a flip?
It was cute. It was like a very childish, like, I want to do a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, I guess it's trying to show that he wants to do exactly what, McCall's doing, so that way he can share that with her as well and bring them one step closer together. Neller goes on to explain to Zia that the more he wants to do the miracle, the less likely it will happen because he's trying to make it happen. McCall arrives to ask permission to drive Neller's truck, to which Neller agrees. She invites Zia to come along with her. The pair drive out into the desert. McCall and Zia bond by sharing the things they miss about being alive. We see that the pair have tracked down Eugene and Nanook, who are in a quarry getting to know one another and fishing. Eugene is trying to show Nanook how to open a beer bottle with a lighter. She's not doing it right at all.
No.
But yeah, Eugene is going right along with it. He's found his pocket that he wants to be in. Zia is amazed that Eugene can perform miracles as he changes the color of the fish. McCall and Zia get into an argument about the PICs and miracles. We finally find out that McCall is here by mistake because she overdosed. Zia has a nightmare about not being able to perform a miracle in order to escape from prison, but he wakes up from his nightmare. We get a flashback of Nanook's death. She killed herself by drinking and staying out in the below freezing climate.
I couldn't do that.
I knew of somebody who didn't do that, didn't kill themselves intentionally, but they did die because they were drinking.
Oh,
and
they fell asleep in the snow.
They stumbled and probably just tried to get up and couldn't, and they died from exposure. Yeah. It was very weird. I had a brief encounter with them. It was in Wisconsin. So it was very weird to find that out.
Oh, yeah. Well, Wisconsin is so cold.
The land of a million cheeses, they call it, I believe, right?
There's a lot of cheese in Wisconsin. Ooh, there's a lot of cheese in those hills.
And the bartenders can drink.
Yes, they can. And I have gotten drunk with quite a few bartenders in Wisconsin. And I'm like, this doesn't happen in Arizona.
No.
Like, you've had as many shots as I have, and you're over there working.
Yeah. Even, I mean, New York, it's legal, but they've even put the bar owners, of a lot of them have kind of like, hey, try not to drink.
Sure.
So much.
Yeah. Like,
I'm still in charge of the money.
Sure. And I just guess you guys would know better that there's probably times you're like, you know what? Yeah, sure. I'll join with you one here. I don't know the laws here, so I don't know how that really works.
They're incredibly strict here.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me the least bit.
They'll shut a bar down.
Yeah.
Jan rushes into the camp, shouting that the Messiah King, who lives over at the other side of the forest, has Freddy. So Jan, Neller, Zia, and McCall will leave in the morning to go see the miracle that the Messiah King will perform and to rescue Freddy.
Is that after the beach scene?
This is leading up
to
the beach
scene.
No,
this is leading up to, yeah. It's
so gross.
Yes,
the most uncomfortable looking beach.
Yeah, like the blue filter did wonders in the previous, like the leading up to that morning, and then you look down and you're like, man, like,
yeah.
So the group has to camp for the evening because they did not find the Messiah King's compound that day. While Zia and McCall are looking for firewood, they find the ocean. And the pair decide to walk the rocky shore and bond some more. Zia tells McCall that he misses the way he was because she reminds him of those feelings. And Zia goes in for a kiss. The following morning, Zia and McCall wake up to Neller calling out for them. When Zia looks down, he realizes that they were sleeping on a bunch of used condoms and syringes. I love Tom Waits' explanation. He's like, yeah, this is where all the junkies and the prostitutes congregate. But they don't even come here because it's too nasty. And when he turns around, he reaches into his jacket and pulls out, like, I don't know if it was a condom or if it was just like a piece of tissue or something. But I think it was supposed to represent like the grossness that was there, and he got it in him somehow on him somehow.
Are we to believe that you can get pregnant in this? You know what I mean?
Sure.
Why would you need a condom?
Yeah, why? Exactly.
I get that it was there for, it was hilarious.
Yes.
And I don't know what grossed me out more was that they slept on the condoms or that they slept on those rocks.
Sure.
Like that was,
yeah.
I hate rocky beaches for that very reason. They look so terribly uncomfortable. And there are always these people like putting their towels down and sitting on them. Like I wouldn't even want to walk on them.
Yeah. Rocky beach, I'm like, yeah. That doesn't, like, I'll walk across it if it leads me to a much more not rocky,
and
maybe a little bit smoother stone. Like, even small pebble, like pea gravel, I wouldn't be like,
yeah, it's not comfortable. I think I'd rather sleep on the condoms. It looks so uncomfortable.
Nice fluffy condoms to sleep on.
Yeah, some fluffy condoms.
You get some free moisturizer, too.
Exactly,
hey.
Yeah.
After they return to their small camp, Neller hopes that Jan isn't lost. But yep, Jan is lost. The three whistle and yell for Jan. Jan returns to then show them where the Messiah King's camp or compound is. The four of them arrive to a full-blown party, and Neller is already causing hell. The Messiah King, played by Will Arnett, argues that Freddy came to him to be part of the big miracle. Jan has brought Zia and McCall to the same office area that the Messiah King and Neller are arguing. Zia looks into the room and he spots Desiree, who's trying to like keep Neller and Messiah King from fighting. Desiree locks eyes with Zia. The two of them go to catch up and talk about why Desiree's here. Neller and the Messiah King want to settle the dog issue. So Neller tries to entice Freddy with some treats and shaking some stuff. But Freddy just growls instead.
That's because Freddy was being fed T-bone steaks.
Thick cut 16
thick,
ounce.
Yes, uh-huh. Thick cut 16 yeah. ounce yeah. T-bone steaks.
There's the question. Did the dog commit suicide too, and that's why he's there?
Ooh, that is a good question.
Like it just
dogs can't commit suicide.
I think they can.
He could run right in front of a car.
Example? Well, sure.
Dog could eat itself to death, run into traffic. You know,
could he's fucking, depressed because nobody's feeding him 16-ounce steaks.
Yeah.
Do we know that?
No.
Yeah.
This is called Imagination Land. It's also a bird. We don't know if there's a bird.
Well, they did have they had animals. They didn't. Sure. We didn't see a lot of animals, but they had chickens and things.
They had cheese pizza. Yeah, he was making cheese pizza.
Yeah, but domesticated animals. We would have to guess like farm animals and shit.
We would have to guess that the PICs were supplying a certain amount of
animals,
livestock, animals, things like that.
That also means partner in crime, though. So sure. Just know that.
It does. PIC is
not just people in charge. It's partner in crime.
Okay.
It's true. That's true.
Which could, you know, it's the same thing sometimes.
Sometimes it is, yeah. Desiree and Zia catch up, and this is where we learn that Desiree did not come back for her ex-boyfriend Zia, but came back for her ex-boyfriend, the Messiah King.
Messiah.
We find out that King, which is his shortened name or his last name, is a cult leader, and he's still plying his trade in the Limbo Lands, as he's now gathered a bunch of other people to his cult. To see if him killing himself will send him to another land or return him back to life. The gong sounds, which means it's time for his miracle. Zia finds Neller with Freddy, and the Messiah King starts his speech. Neller tells Zia just to go bare his feelings to McCall. The Messiah King kills himself again, and as everyone looks on in wonder, Zia notices Neller talking into a radio behind Freddy. I wonder if Freddy's a radio. The way that it looked like, I was like, maybe Freddy's a fucking radio or something. I don't know. Like, he was holding him. Like,
maybe Freddy was in charge.
Maybe he was telling Neller what to do the whole time. Yeah. Neller has requested backup at the compound. When Zia looks at what Neller is looking up at, Neller makes his escape as Zia is busy. The figures from the sky are agents working for the PIC. We also see Neller with Freddy escorting Desiree into a different white van, or a white van that the PICs use. We also see that McCall is in the back of one of these small PIC vans. McCall tells Zia that she'll be back in 5 minutes. Zia waits, but does not return. Instead, Eugene and Nanook arrive to pick up Zia. At a makeshift train station, Nanook, Eugene, and Zia have dinner. Zia is told that Neller works for the PIC. A small train car shows up to take Nanook and Eugene to the North Pole, where Nanook's family is residing. Eugene tells Zia that McCall got her file rechecked and was on her way to return to life. Eugene leaves his car to Zia.
I love that tiny fucking little train car they get in there.
Yes.
It's the cutest thing. It's a little cutie.
So the small train departs. Zia returns to Neller's camp to pick up his belongings. Angry at his situation, he kicks some stuff. He rips some tape. He throws some stuff. He lights a found cigarette. Don't ever light a found cigarette. Whatever you do, do not light a found cigarette.
Do
you don't
it.
Know if they have herpes.
Herpes doesn't stay that long on cigarettes. He's lying to you. Do that all the time. If you need a cigarette that bad, do it. Share needles.
Don't share needles.
Share needles and condoms. You know, spray paint your name on a Burger King wall.
That you could do. Yeah, go for that. Sharing a condom, that's a weird one to do. Like,
but here, there were so many on that beach.
Yeah, there were.
So
it washes out. I understand. It's fine. You got the ocean right there. It's the cleanest thing on the planet is the ocean. Everybody
loves it. It'll
sterilize
it. It's got salt in it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Always put salt on your penis.
Put salt on your penis and your cuts.
Always put salt in your
and
eyes.
Share needles mm-hmm. and dirty cigarettes.
There you go. You heard it from Josh.
That's the sequel for this movie.
Used condoms and dirty cigarettes.
It's called herpes, hepatitis C, and Burger King.
Oh,
there
my.
There you go. There you go.
In the bathroom.
Zia uses a match to light his found cigarette and throws the match aside. But a most astonishing thing happens. The lit match floats up towards the night sky, settling next to McCall's star. Zia drives off. Zia then narrates about how his miracle coming when it least matters, about how Eugene was right about his choice of women, and that he hopes McCall got what she was seeking. She did say that she would be right back. During this narration, McCall is having her life passport approved and getting through the screening process. Zia continues to drive. When he is stopped at a train crossing, the cassette tape that he had been listening to starts to distort. Zia ejects the tape, drops the tape when trying to fix the problem.
Chunk.
Yep, there you go. The fumbled tape falls under the passenger seat. When Zia reaches too far for the tape, he is sucked into the black hole under the passenger seat. Cut to Neller dressed in a white suit in a bright warehouse, reaches into a cardboard file box. He pulls out a file that holds Zia's information, and he tucks it away under his jacket and walks away. Zia is falling through a black hole, unspaghettified. The many glasses and cassettes that he had dropped over the course of the movie float around him. The disembodied voice of Neller asks Zia, "Pays to know people in high places, huh?" And the scene fades to white. Zia opens his eyes, awake and alive in the real world. He is in a hospital. His parents are in the background. As he looks around the room, he notices that he is sharing a room with another patient. When that person turns their head, it's McCall, looking back at Zia. Roll credits. Megs, what's your, we'll get your rating after we go around, but what's your final reactions?
It's just as good as I remembered.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. I think, there is that nostalgia because they just don't make movies like this anymore.
Very true.
But, yeah. But I like it. The cast is great. It moves along pretty quickly. I think it's a pretty quick moving movie. I wouldn't even mind a little bit more. I do like how quickly everybody forms relationships in this movie.
Sure,
they become best friends really quickly. They meet this gal. She becomes a part of their trio really quickly. Then they lose her, but they get her back really quickly.
Yeah.
They end up in this weird camp, and they become they become part of the camp very quickly.
Yeah.
To the point where even when they're like, "Oh, we're looking for our dog," you know, their dog that they just met, they haven't even met yet. They have met the dog yet.
Yeah, uh-uh.
And it's just, they're just like part of this camp now. We live in this camp. And then they're like, "Well, we can't stay in the camp very long. We should probably start moving." You know, it's just, I like the movie a lot. I like how quickly everything comes together. But I wouldn't mind a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit more of the road trip.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have liked to have seen a little more. I don't know if there was ever a sequel. I'd like to see a little bit more world building now that we know the little basis of it. I would like to see a little bit more explanation. Okay. If there's people in charge, mm-hmm. are there people in crime people in anti-charge? I don't know. I'm just.
They just kind of headed in a direction and they ended up finding people, but I don't even think they knew where they were going.
Yeah.
You know, they were just like, "Oh, let's go that way."
Well, sure. Yeah. They were basing trying to find Desiree on the gut feeling or intuition fucking McCall had. After Zia didn't know what to do.
Like, yeah, but yeah, it's a fun movie. I think they did a great job.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Josh, what's your final reaction?
It's, you know, it's near tail end, independent style movies, you know?
Sure.
You know, like, good cast, you know, everybody was on point. story is really interesting. You know, I feel like sometimes when you see the writing come through on film, and it's like, you know, it's like that singular idea, like the black hole part. That's like literally like, fuck, man. Anytime I drop something underneath the car seat or the right side of my car, it just fucking disappears and it's gone forever.
Yeah, those.
Like, I love that aspect of it. Not really great on the music end. You know, it is cool because it's not actual, you know, it is him, but it's not.
They used one song like at least seven different times.
There was the Tom Waits song in the beginning.
Yeah, that one was cool. Like, that was a cool song.
It's just his voice is scratchy and kind of annoys the shit out of me.
Sometimes. I love Tom Waits. Like, that's and fine. You know that.
You can love that. Yeah. You can do the moon, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
I thought the music was perfect for this movie.
Because it is expressing the drab's limbo.
Yeah, you know you're, I mean? Not gonna, you're not going to have a lot of music in this place.
I
you're
wanted get some the one like Peter Steele, you know, fucking just dropping some notes, 6'7", big old dick, you know.
All right.
That's what, you know, that's the rumor. He's dead. R.I.P. Did he kill himself?
I don't know.
I don't know. I think he OD'd or something like that. Anyways. It's a good movie. It's fun.
What about you, TB?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this great. I thought this movie was great.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I have no problems with it. Like, it's a mid-2000s movie. This is a cult classic movie.
Yeah.
Like, it appeals to a very small amount of individuals who like the premise of the plot.
Yeah.
Of how everybody gets to where they're at.
Right. And it's also about a very dark thing.
It is.
Like, it commonly is not brought up or talked about or anything like that, you know, like.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Even when their use of, if we go back to the music, drab, you know, you got Joy Division. Like, yeah. Joy Division is one of those types of bands that people's generally associate with, like,
are you saying emo? Are you speaking of the emos?
But they're not. Joy Division isn't an emo band. They were a very groundbreaking type of band with their style of music, like, and
the Cure,
how
like
they,
the Cure was back in the '80s. You know,
they were pre emo band,
dark
they're,
and gothic.
They're kind of what the emos became. They grew out of that.
I will take a guess and speculate that I bet you if you ask some top five emo bands who their top 10 is, Joy Division will probably be in the top five, not the, like, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, so,
like, we didn't have emos when I was AFI. A kid, but you could see where they were, where they came from.
Yes, yes. But outside of that, this is great story. I think the story beats are great. Like, the way that it was, like, I don't know if it's a three. You could probably say it's a three. It has a three acts in here. Probably, I don't know. But it does do a good job at giving a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
Like, it sets up everything right. There are some good payoffs. I wish we could have got some resolution with Eric. Just even if, like, he got his cottage cheese.
See, no, if that was done now, there would have been a scene with Eric Cohen waiting there, or just staring at his, like, there's staring, like, at the door like a dog that's been, like, you know. But no,
I this movie's great. It's in my watch list. Watch it with somebody.
Is this the same year that, like, Iron Man came out? Was that 2007?
I believe so. It was either 7 or 8. It might have been 08. When Iron Man came out, but I think Hulk may have been out in 07 though.
2008 Iron Man.
Yeah. But even this was done in 2006, but
yeah, okay.
Just great movie. I'll watch it with somebody if they've never seen it, be like, let's fucking put it on. I'll watch it again. I will watch it again.
This movie is 18 years old. I mean, it's an adult child.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird how time flies, but
yeah, it's great.
It holds up.
Yeah. Megs, you got a rating for this?
I do. I'm going to give it 4 thick 16-ounce T-bone steaks.
Okay. All right. Mm. Very cool. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, how about you?
I'm going to go 4 black holes. Under the seats.
Four black holes. Okay. All right. Great. Leave this open. I'm going to go 4 used condoms with syringes in them.
Oh.
Just like a condom and it's like cross-tatched.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. 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 Like this movie's great. I understand it if you don't want to watch this movie ever because the of dark your themes. Own traumas. Yeah. That's fine. This movie is great.
Yeah.
It is. It does. It respects that. And I don't think it ever takes it lightly, and it does a lot of that with it does a lot of, I believe, in my own opinion, reverence to the subject.
It's true. I'll say this, I can't watch Hook anymore, not just because of Robin Williams, but Bob's gone too.
Yeah, Bob Haas. No Bob Haas.
Can't watch it anymore.
I couldn't watch it because Robin Williams was in it.
Go fuck yourself.
Robin Williams is the worst.
What are you talking about?
He's a lovely man, but he's
no
terrible.
One else can play with that glee and vitality.
Hook was probably one of the few movies of his that I could actually sit through.
The thing about that is he's not the Bob and Dustin Hoffman as Hook. That was the real movie right there.
Oh yeah,
yes.
Dustin
the
Hoffman.
The fucking other shit is just him
Dustin
playing with
Hoffman
fucking children the whole
stole
time.
Stole that movie.
And then there's. I thought of a movie we got to do once. We'll talk about that after when the camera's not rolling anymore.
Ooh.
Secrets.
Secrets. Well, now this will bring us, after we got our reviews or final reaction reviews, brings us to our next segment, which is going to be our next genre.
Oh.
I've
got an idea here, folks.
Oh, all right. Okay.
We've recently lost one of the greats. Dabney Coleman.
Okay, yeah.
And I propose that we watch...
You want 9 to 5? What are we watching?
I would like to watch Cloak and Dagger, one of my all-time favorite Dabney Coleman films.
Yeah.
Right. Where he plays not one. But two roles.
Okay.
One of the hardest things for an actor to do.
Oh, yeah.
And I heard he also plays a dinner role in that movie, too.
A dinner roll? Nice.
It was fucking filthy. Yeah, it was a filthy joke.
Good
eat
puns.
That, eat that,
puns.
Motherfuckers.
Maybe some of you are asking yourself, who is Dabney Coleman? I'm getting that. 9 to 5, as Josh said. Cloak and Dagger. Tootsie.
Short Time.
Yeah, Tootsie.
On Golden Pond. I'm trying to see if there is anything TV-wise
the
for
most
those.
Recent role was from, what is this show, Yellowstone, that everybody watches?
Yes.
He played Kevin Costner's father.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Towards the end there. And that was because the creator of the show worked with him back
in
the 90s.
He had a TV show back in the... Didn't he, back in the day?
Yeah, he was on a show back... Well, he was on the cowboy one.
No, wasn't it like a dad or something on something?
He was
like a military dad or some shit.
Are you talking about Gerald McCraney?
No,
I don't know. I'm crazy.
I think you're right. I thought
he was on Buffalo. It was like Buffalo Bill, where he played like a newscaster back in the 80s. That was his big TV show.
Maybe we're thinking. We must be thinking of
War Games.
I think you're thinking.
Probably.
You're thinking of
actor.
Gerald McCraney.
Yes.
Major Dad.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that too.
That's Gerald McCraney from Simon and Simon and from Neverending Story.
Oh, and The Man with One Red Shoe, Dabney.
Dabney,
Coleman,
that's a great one based on the French film.
Yeah. Dragnet, the remake of Dragnet. Mm-hmm. So the 80s.
Yeah, he was in a lot in the 80s.
Yeah, doesn't... So maybe Drexel's Class was maybe his most extensive TV appearance that I'm seeing here on IMDb. And Madman of the People.
Or Madame of the People?
I thought that's what it said, but I had a dyslexic moment. Madman of the People. I've never seen that.
I think
those
were short.
94 to 95.
Yeah, those were short-lived shows.
16 episodes, so probably one season and started, and they, who knows. But, then Recess, which was 97 to 99. Definitely a... I think that's an animated series.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I was watching. No, I was... Yeah, that was high school years for me. So I was watching
one of my favorites, Hot to Trot.
Hot to Trot. I forgot about that one. Hot to Trot,
starring the great Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh, yeah.
Anton Horses!
Who was in that? Terry Garr?
Oh, the chick? I don't remember, man. It's fucking...
So I'm seeing a TV
John
series.
John Candy, Virginia Madsen.
Oh, Virginia Madsen.
Yeah. From 2001 to 2004, called The Guardian. Oh, this had the guy, Simon Baker...
yes.
Before Simon Baker went to do the
Mentalist.
Yes, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. This was a 2001 to 2004.
I briefly saw one or two episodes.
Sure, sure, yeah. It definitely. I don't know what network it was on, but for 3 years it was. I'm going to take a stab and say either ABC, NBC, probably not Fox or CBS. It sounds like, from what I'm seeing here, it looks like something with those three.
I think this might have been the show that the creator of Yellowstone did an episode of where he met Dabney Coleman, and that's the reason he cast him on Yellowstone.
Okay. Yeah.
It was something that happened in the early 2000s that he worked for them.
Cool. Yeah. So in honor of and to show our respects to Dabney Coleman, we'll be watching Cloak and Dagger. You can find that, or you can rent it on Amazon Prime. You could also, I believe it was on Tubi and maybe YouTube, all for rent. Unless maybe you have it on DVD or video and you still have a VCR that you're watching it on.
Perhaps.
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 But yeah, so do that and then catch us next time. And that brings us to our next segment, which is Give Me the Juice.
Give Me the Juice. So I just watched Eric.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
What'd you think?
I think that Benedict is probably going to get an Emmy for this. He was fantastic. The show itself looked gorgeous. It looked just like it was supposed to look. I was a little thrown off by some of the inaccuracies of pull tabs.
Sure.
They weren't really around by 1985.
No, I think.
Yeah, we had the
little flip top or what we have now.
That was exactly what we have now.
Yeah.
But the show was a little preachy. I didn't care for the message. I thought it was stupid. Thought the kid was a weirdo. I'm not a huge fan of Gabby Hoffman. I think she's a great actress. I just don't enjoy her. Other than that, it was good to look. Eye candy. It was great to watch. It was just one of those very messagey shows that was kind of like, this is our agenda. And
sure.
It was very agenda oriented, but other than that, everybody has an agenda, I guess, and that was theirs. And it was still good to look at. It was still a good show to watch.
Okay, yeah, I'm about halfway through, mm-hmm. So I watched the first three episodes, and I was like, okay, I'll save the other three for another night. But I really enjoyed what I've watched so far.
Yeah, it's I think it's award worthy for Benedict.
Yeah.
And probably for Gabby, I just don't
care. Sure. Very cool, very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Josh, how about yourself? What's new in your repertoire?
So I had the complete and utter unpleasure of watching Madam Web.
Oh,
I forced myself to sit through this piece of shit. And it is just vile. Like, it is like you. Oh my God! Whoever made this movie really fucking hates people. You fucking hate people. You hate the dreams that we have.
Sony.
You hate everything that a comic is made of and about. Like everything.
Yes.
Like it's just fucking terrible. Oh my God! I can't. It's hard to explain how big of a piece of shit this movie was. It's like it's basically like. Like when Nick Cage was making terrible movies, like Next and all those ones like that.
Yeah, Knowing.
Knowing, worse than that. That at least showed you like some cool stuff. Like, there's 800 million possibilities. What's going to go on here, you know? And you're like, oh, Nick Cage is in it. It's kind of cool or whatever.
Yeah.
This is just fucking shit. She's like, yeah. I'm going to protect you girls. Here, this is how you do CPR. And they do it for 3 seconds. And they're like, arms are tired. I was like, oh, okay, switch out. And I was, 3 fucking seconds of doing fake compressions on a pillow. And these teenage girls are like, oh, I'm so tired. This is tiring. Whoever wrote this is fucking just stupid.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Yes. I
not even no boobies in it either.
Sure,
could have had a booby.
Wasn't it? It's basically protect Peter Parker. The boiled down plot of it.
Yeah,
the boiled down plot of it.
Essentially, what's Adam Scott?
Yes,
is Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
So you're gonna kill Adam Scott now. Great, you know.
Yeah.
Like how many times can you see fucking his uncles and aunts die? This guy's life sucks, and they got to make a shitty, sucky movie just to make it fucking worse?
Yeah.
Poor Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Feel bad for him.
I agree.
And, like, at the end, they throw her in a wheelchair, and she can walk. She's just in a goddamn wheelchair that's electronic now. She's just blind. It's stupid. I'm
pretty sure that being blind doesn't affect your ability to stand.
Yeah.
I'm just going to guess.
She has these weird glasses. Like, I know Mark, she's just staring out the window.
Yeah, Mark walks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've seen him walk.
I take him to the bathroom.
Blind people walk
a
lot.
He just has trouble
walking. You can walk when you're blind.
Yeah.
He's not great at it, though. Let's be honest. He's the worst.
But he's also, you know, being where we see him at.
He wasn't born blind. He still sees stuff.
He's not a born blind, and he's
just deteriorated sight.
He didn't get good at it.
And
he walks into a lot of walls.
What if you said, hey, would you like this magic wheelchair you'll never hit a wall?
That's
magic.
That would be great, because then I wouldn't have to take him to the bathroom.
But then his chair can't fit in there, and all of a sudden he's going out the back door and pissing on a fucking homeless guy.
Well, that's not going to
be
good
against,
for anybody.
Listen, we're not against blind people.
No.
At all. Or deaf people.
No.
We hate when they
Why
get bullied.
Why are you bringing the deaf people
we
in?
We hate when they get bullied.
Oh, yeah. We don't want the deaf people to be bullied.
Deaf people can't be bullied. Neither should blind
people. We need to hire a bully to make sure that nobody bullies the deaf. Hell, and the blind.
You know you should bully is Sony for making this piece of shit movie.
I agree.
Bully them.
I agree.
That's my part there.
Very Good cool.
Job. What do you got, Trevor? What do you think?
So it's not nothing. It's not a new show, and it only ran for one season. It was just a one and done. It's called Devs.
Oh yeah. Nick Offerman.
Yeah, Nick Offerman. Oh. Nick Offerman is in it.
You know, I'll watch anything with my Nick Offerman.
That's it. That's all I can say. I don't recall. No, there was his little protege / partner that I remember her being. I think she was the drummer in fucking Scott Pilgrim Saves the World.
Oh, okay.
Mari or something.
Yeah, I think. I don't know for sure. I'm just recalling from memory, which isn't always great. However, it is a really, really cool take on quantum computers and not AI. It didn't go into AI because at the time when the series was made and it was written and directed and created by what's his name? Alex Garland,
yeah.
who did Deus Machina or Ex Machina, did Civil War. He directed Annihilation, did the adaptation for that as well.
Alison Pill.
Oh yeah, Alison Pill. I haven't seen her in years.
Yeah.
I was picturing somebody else as the drummer for some reason. I forgot that was Alison Pill.
Yeah. Yeah, so she's really good in it too. It's cool. It's a very cerebral and it's very slow. There is not a lot of action. It's very dialogue driven and
super slow.
Yeah. And very 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 cerebral. But it's cool. It's just telling a resurrection and family unification story.
Well, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, yeah. You could totally take your time with it, because it does sort of require to put some attention to it because of how slow it does go, and it's on Hulu.
Oh, okay.
So there's commercials in it, so it's like watching. It's going back to like the mid to late 2000s, where you're like, yeah, shows, fucking watch it on ABC and commercials and right back to it. Yeah, so if you want to go check those out, go for it.
Or don't.
Or don't. Yeah.
Don't check out like, Josh's.
Maybe you do. Maybe you like giving yourself that much of unentertainment.
Yeah.
That you want to watch it.
It's on Netflix if you want to waste a couple hours.
Yeah.
Or it'll help you sleep. If you have a problem sleeping, it'll help you there too.
I can't sleep when I'm angry. Is it going to make me angry?
I
mean, probably.
How much do you enjoy comics?
I don't care for comics, but I might get angry anyway.
But you understand good film, mm-hmm. and good story structure.
Right.
You'll probably not enjoy this at all and get angry.
I have
angry.
A feeling. I saw the previews.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it didn't make you want to go watch it,
did not make me want to watch it.
Yeah.
It looked really annoying.
Just, I mean, instead you can sit there and eat an entire block of cheese and get terrible bubble gut diarrhea. Mm-hmm.
And get cheese farts.
And fart your own face off. And you'd be like, wow, that was pretty bad. But then you watch Madam Web and you're like, that's worse somehow.
I'll have some more cheese, please.
Yes, like, yeah.
And my asshole's leaking for some reason. I don't know why.
The anal leakage that comes with so many pills that we've seen on the television.
I think it might have said, instead of saying, like, this has this in it, it says, this movie may cause anal leakage.
Yes, yeah. That needs to be put onto the MPAA rating as well.
They're like, we don't do star wipes in this movie. We do ass wipes.
Nice.
You're going to need it.
All right, yeah, so go do what Josh said. Which brings us to our next segment, which is reviews. Josh, we don't have any for you to read.
Oh, I thought so. I thought you were going to say, we have one.
I'm hoping. Like, not even email. Not even an email from some type of
just
scammer.
Just a thumbs up.
He looks so excited. Yeah,
can we get some scammers to, like, really, you know, come after us or something?
Something. Like, it just give us more stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, now that that's dealt with, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Megs appreciates it.
I appreciate you. That's my favorite saying.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, yeah. So you can, you know, rate us, follow us on whichever platform that you use. You can go on Spotify, leave a comment there. You can go on Apple Podcasts and leave a comment there, review there. You can go to Instagram at the Amateur Movie Review Hour. Or you can email us at the Amateur Movie Review Hour at gmail.com.
And remember, the elections are coming up, voting and stuff like that. We are anti-voting, by the way. Everybody here, we don't vote because it's stupid. So no voting. Unless you're voting for the worst movie ever, which is Madam Web.
There we go. Sony, that was for you. Yeah, thank you for listening, and I'll check you later.
See you on the flip side.
ありがとう。